This is WAMC's Northeast Report. I'm Jim Lavoulis. We turn now to WAMC's Alan Chartok and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Good afternoon to you both.
And good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Right, Gov?
Right. I agree with whatever you say, right?
Right. Okay, here we are. I have a very important question to you. What exactly are you going to do over Christmas, you know?
Work. Plus, I have the state of the state. The whole Christmas holiday for me becomes about the state of the state. But, you know, it's this crazy holiday season. We're going to watch the COVID numbers go up, which we expect they will. We're going to keep communicating that people should be careful and be careful of living room spread and work on the state of the state.
I hear you. So, you know, no special meal planned or anything like that?
Nah, not this year.
Okay, thank you. Look, $908 billion compromise they're looking at now in the Congress. Is that enough?
It depends on how they allocate the 908. If they try to do it politically, which is the way they've acted with the CARES Act money, distributed politically, it's not enough. If they did it by need, it could be enough. If you actually help the states who had the greatest pain from COVID, if you did it as a matter of fairness, this state was ambushed by COVID because the federal government was asleep or deceptive. How they didn't know that the virus left China and went to Europe and it was coming here for 3 months is still the great mystery of all time. But on the budget, there's basically, vis-a-vis the state, there's basically two options now, Alan. Option A, at any point, this state could say, we're going to enact a budget. We're tired of waiting for Washington. We're going to raise revenues that we can raise and finalize the budget and do that now. That's option A. No matter how high you raise revenues on option A, and we would have to do significant tax increases, the hole is so big, right? It's about $15 billion. We're going to raise taxes and close the budget. You would lay off about 7,000 MTA workers. You'd have to raise MTA fares and tolls. You'd have to lay off local government employees. You'd have to cut about 20% of the state budget. That's after you raise taxes, right? So that's option A, tax increase and a 20% cut, thousands of employees laid off just when you're going to do a vaccination program, cuts to education, cuts to Medicaid. Option B is wait for federal relief and use the federal relief to adjust, rationalize the budget. And we're in December. I'm 1 month away from doing the next budget presentation, right? So close out this year with next year when you know what the federal aid is going to be. You may still have to do a tax increase, and you may still have to do cuts, but at least you know where you are. And I have to believe that Joe Biden is responsible and we get real federal relief so there's not as much pain.
But what happens you're waiting for Biden? Is your account taking in that on some level the Congress and the president would have to agree to save New York?
I am banking on the federal government provides assistance. Look, I said to you, if Donald Trump had won for president, then I would say do the budget now, because you're not going to get anything next year. Bubkis, Skata, Niente, whatever language you want to use. But I believe Joe Biden will provide a federal stimulus. I believe he'll provide a federal infrastructure program. And I don't think we're going to have to savage services the way we would have to if we don't get the federal relief. But is option A or B? You could do a budget today and do a tax increase and then cut everything 20%. Or let's deal with this year, which is now running into next year. Do it together and hope and pray and fight for fair federal funding.
Have you talked to the Biden people or to Biden about this? Because, you know, it seems to me we're riding into this kind of with a mask on over our eyes.
Well, we're walking into everything with a mask on, okay? Yes. They will say A. Forget A because it's confusing with my other A. They'll say, we think the $908 billion package should be passed now, the so-called Senator Manchin interim measure, that should be passed now in December. That provides short-term relief. And then the Biden administration in February proposes a large economic stimulus checks, infrastructure, and you put the congressional action this month, the 908, together with the Biden stimulus, and it would alleviate the significance of the impact to the states. That's what they will say.
So what's going on in the meantime? You got agencies to support. You got school systems to support. We're way behind the eight ball. What do you do until Biden takes office?
Well, you keep doing what we're doing, which is we're funding operations at a reduced level because we don't have the funding. It is a little bit wait and see. Washington has been doing this to us for several months now, right? It's always next week, next week, next week. Now this $908 billion Senator Manchin package on the table. Maybe that's going to happen, would have to happen by Christmas. Then you have January, President Biden comes in. The reason I'm on for option B is because option A,
unacceptable.
Option A, where we pass a state tax revenue bill, and let's say we do a millionaire's tax and a billionaire's tax, okay? That gets you about tops $2 billion. Tops. You now have a $13 billion hole. That is thousands of layoffs. You have an MTA that has a $12 billion hole. That's increased subway fare, bus fare. It would be so devastating to this state that even if Biden then did a federal plan February, March, and you got the funding, I think you would have cut yourself so deeply and bled so much that I don't even think the federal funding next February, March would alleviate the pain. You know, once you say, Alan, school districts, you have to cut 20%. Local governments, you have to cut 20%. Once you say that, they will act on that. And they will lay off teachers, and they will lay off first responders and local employees. You say that now, and then in February you say, oh, look at that. Joe Biden just passed the package, and now we actually have funding. It's too late. The damage was done. They fired the teachers. They fired the employees. What are you going to have everybody now go rehire? you know, it would be so disruptive. It would be really terrible.
Okay. The FDA is going to approve a vaccine, obviously. It's going to come to New York. What plans do you have? Anything? How to distribute it?
The state is in charge of the distribution for the state. I've been working with the CDC, FDA, the military, which actually does the distribution, which is going to use FedEx and a private company called McKesson, or something like McKesson. Yeah. But I get a kick out of the military using FedEx. But anyway, they do the actual distribution. The state controls distribution throughout the state. Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, New York City, et cetera. The state controls where the initial vaccine is distributed and stored, and then the distribution priority plan, they call it. Our prioritization are nursing home staff, which will be conducted by the federal government, then high-risk healthcare workers. We have about 700,000 healthcare workers, but we designate high-risk healthcare workers are those people who are working with COVID-positive people. And that will be the initial distribution. And then we just do it proportionately across the state.
You were at one point very concerned about, you know, the people who are black and brown and poor in many cases, getting screwed under the system. And you made remarks about, you know, we can all go to CVS and Walgreens and the rest, but how are we going to make sure that the underserved population gets it? Have you done more thinking about that?
I've been thinking about it, arguing, advocating, persuading, cajoling, lobbying. It is a very big concern, and frankly, it's a concern that this state is championing for the nation. I had governors on the phone this morning talking about it. Two levels of concern. First, the discrimination that we've seen through this COVID crisis is so disturbing. Blacks died at twice the rate of whites. Latinos died at 1.5 times the rate of whites. COVID infection higher among blacks and Latinos. More essential workers, blacks and Latinos. And now the answer for the vaccine would actually aggravate that disparity because they have no outreach plan to reach the black and Latino community in poor communities. We will have a very aggressive outreach plan that gets to black Latino communities, poor communities, using churches, using faith-based organizations. I've been working with the Urban League and the NAACP to do just that. We also have to have a tremendous public education effort because remember this, for the vaccine to work, you have to hit 75 to 85% critical mass. You now have 50% of the people who say they won't take the vaccine. That is a mathematical conundrum. How do you get to 75% when 50% say they won't take it? So it's going to be much harder than people think. But a priority that I've raised for the Biden administration and vis-a-vis the Trump administration, where is your prioritization for outreach for the communities that paid the highest price during COVID? The poor, the essential workers, the blacks and the brown communities.
And how do you do that? You got to go 50 degrees below zero or whatever it is, which I don't remember. How can you do that? I mean, arguably, CVS and Walgreens can find the resources to do that. But how do you do that for people who, you know, who live in these communities?
Alan, Matt, you are 100% right. It is a massive undertaking. There is no such infrastructure. You're going to need the military. The cold storage is a real problem. I unpacked a box from Pfizer that the vaccine comes in. You have to add dry ice. You can only open the box twice a day for no more than 60 to 90 seconds each time. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the temperature changes. No, you put the public education effort to overcome the cynicism together with the logistical operation. Remember this. This nation, over 9 months, did about 130 million COVID tests. COVID tests, just the Q-tip in your nose. We have to do 330 million vaccines. We only did 130 million COVID tests over 9 months. It's a massive, massive undertaking.
And you're doing it by, have you appointed anybody? Do you have a czar? Have you got a plan?
We have a plan. I don't have a czar, but I have a great team. And it's the same team that has been working on COVID all along. Some members of the team have come back from the, who helped us at the height of the COVID crisis. Larry Schwartz has come back, my former secretary, as you know well, who's going to help us because we have a dual issue now. We have to do the vaccine and we have to do the hospital monitoring as the hospital capacity is stressed under COVID. So we have our hands full.
So will the hospitals have a role in administering the vaccine with all of the overstress that they have now?
Yes, they will have, yes. But in some ways it's to their benefit because they're also vaccinating first their own people.
So
that's the good news. And look, the hospitals are a great distribution center. The national drug chains are a good distribution center. But your point before, okay, but now you have to get to black communities and brown communities and poor communities where they're suspect about the vaccine in the first place. They don't believe Trump's approval process. They're nervous about the vaccine. You have to get past that whole anti-vaxxer community that now exists. And that's a much larger community than you think. You know, it's grown. People just don't believe in the vaccine, period. And you have to do it quickly, and you have to get to 75-80%.
And you'll take a shot, won't you, Governor?
I will give you a shot, and then we'll see. Yes, no, I will take a shot.
Okay. I want to go somewhere else.
Doctor, I think we should do it together. What do you think?
I'm willing. As soon as I read your book, as soon as I get your book, I'm going to.
Yeah, okay. I know.
Let's talk a little bit about the Electoral College. Frankly, Governor, being an older guy and having seen the worst of the worst of the worst, and I think Trump is the worst, I'm watching now as he every day tries to corrupt the Pennsylvania legislature, the congressional delegation, and I'm scared to death. And I see people like Justice Alito making noises which sound to me like, you know, sympathetic to Trump and what he's doing. And we have an electoral college, which is really messing up. Is there any way we can actually, because I get a lot of mail on this, I get a lot of mail on the electoral college. What can we do to make that change? We've heard some plans, but you talk about it, if you will.
Look, it is doable. It is procedurally difficult. I think it has merit, certainly. And this may be the election that puts it over the edge. You know, I think we've all learned a lot this past year on so many levels, Alan, between COVID, between the Trump presidency, between the elections, the turnout, the confusion, the different ways we had to do this election because of COVID and the mail-in ballots, et cetera. I think we've learned a lot. And I think the time might have come to change the Electoral College. I would support that change. We have our own practical problem here on the Electoral College in that by law, the electors must convene in the state capitol. It doesn't say except if you have a global pandemic. So we're actually going to have to convene people in the Capitol in the midst of this situation. It's not a large group, but you can't do it virtually, or we don't believe legally you can do it virtually. And if we did do it virtually, there could be a challenge. And apropos your point, I don't want to give anyone an opportunity to legally challenge the actions of the electors. And there is a theoretical challenge if we convened electorally. So they are going to have to come assemble in the Capitol.
Have you talked to them? Do they seem chicken, or are they ready to do it? Let's just remind everybody how we get our electors. Each party nominates a certain number of people to be to run for elector. Did you have a hand in who those people were? And are they mad at you now?
They're going to be mad at me when I say they have to come here. I don't think they're mad at me as of yet. But when I say you have to appear in the Capitol, then they will probably be very disappointed with me, if they're not already disappointed with me.
Well, did you make, did you, you know, I know that the Democratic Party nominates the people who are going to run. So did you do that? I mean, did you, are you responsible for who became an elector in any way?
I don't think, not that I recall. I'm sure the Democratic Party did it. I don't think that I recommended, I don't recall recommending any electors.
The only reason I say that is because, you know, if anybody really comes down with it, you're going to get blamed. Don't you see?
Well, if anybody comes down with it, I'm going to get blamed anyway.
you're probably right about that. So I used to tell my students back in the day when I was a young professor, the day that somebody loses the electoral vote and wins the electoral vote and loses in the electoral college, well, that's the day everything will change. Wrong. One more wrong thing on my spotted record.
Well, it sounded right, though. It sounded logical anyway.
It did. Well, do you think that New Yorkers are ready to roll up their sleeves and do what needs to be done here? In other words, do you think New Yorkers understand how bad things are?
Vis-a-vis COVID or the budget or which?
All of it.
I think the first hurdle is getting through the holiday season, and I think it's very hard. I think fatigue, call it what you will, vaccine's almost here, I think we're fine. People get sick, but they don't die, so I feel better about it. And more, I'm just a social being, and I like to be with people, and it's the holidays. And I will stay at home with just my friends and family, and that is apparently safe. That's the greatest obstacle, I think. In your own home, you can be in your living room with your family and your friends and Aunt Ethel and Cousin Joe, and they all love you, but they can still make you sick. You know, it's apparently your safe harbor. And that's where we're seeing the increase. It is in those small gatherings, living room spread. I think it continues to get worse. I've been saying this. I said before Thanksgiving, it's not Thanksgiving, it's 37 days of holiday season. I had Dr. Fauci with me yesterday at the briefing. He said it gets worse till mid-late January. So it's going to be a long slog till January. And then even when you get to January, critical mass for the vaccine wouldn't be until June. So then you still have to get from January till June.
Yeah.
And they're saying they're tired already and we're December. So, no, it's going to get it's a long road, my friend.
Okay. Now, look, we only have a few minutes left. That's because you're very parsimonious and you won't give me more time. But you turned 63 over the weekend. Did you get any good presents?
I got some good presents. I didn't get any bad presents. I got some good presents.
Get a nice tie, did you?
No, no ties, no sweaters. I had done an admonition on ties and sweaters. I got into trouble, by the way. I said no tie, no sweater because they're default gifts. Default gift is when you can't really think about, you don't really know what to get the person. I just get them a tie or a sweater. You know, that's a default position.
Right.
So I said that before my birthday. So I didn't get any ties and sweaters. But I got some cool stuff. I got some stuff for the car. I got some stuff, you know, I love historic letters, and I got some letters. So all good. And plus, you know, my age, another birthday, you don't even want to think about it, right?
Your age. What do you know about age? 63.
Oh, I know
age. You're a kid. Okay. So now we hear that Doug Jones is the favorite to become President-elect Biden's attorney general. Do you have any idea how many people have called me and written me and say, of course Andrew's going to be the attorney general? So is that completely out of the question?
Well, of course, you said in response, I know Andrew Cuomo many years. And when Andrew Cuomo says, this is what I'm going to do, that's what he does. And when he said to the people of the state of New York, I'm going to be with you, I have no intention to run for president or vice president or go to the administration. I'm just going to get us through COVID and then help us rebuild. That's my commitment. That's what he meant.
So what about Doug Jones? Is that a good choice for attorney general?
I don't know him. I don't know. I think Joe Biden should be applauded on the diversity that he's brought to his appointments. Attorney General is really critical, especially now. I mean, look how complicated the situation is. You know, you have what cases might be pursued against former President Trump. All these, you know, everything is so controversial nowadays. So it's a key position. I don't know Doug Jones well enough to say, but it's really the confidence that Biden has in that person. You know, there's a reason why John Kennedy appointed Bobby Kennedy, right? That's a special relationship, and he has to feel that, the president.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Charlie Baker, the governor of my very good state of Massachusetts, announced some reopening rollbacks after previously saying elective surgeries will stop on Friday. What rollbacks are you looking at today? Is indoor dining, especially in New York City, or on borrowed time? And you only have 2 minutes to do that in.
By the way, you're a good state. I was with Charlie Baker today, by the way. He is a good man. We were both awarded the Ted Kennedy Institute Award, Senator Ted Kennedy Institute Award.
Where was it?
It was all virtual. So he was it looked like in the state capitol, and I was in the capitol, but that was taped today. Actually, I don't know when they broadcast it, but Vicky Kennedy, Senator Kennedy's widow, runs the Ted Kennedy Institute, and he won the award, and I won the award from the Institute for Leadership, their leadership award. And it was actually very nice. Ted Kennedy, I worked with. I showed that he sent me a flag the day I was confirmed as HUD secretary. And he taught me a lot. I'll tell you one quick Ted Kennedy story. I mentioned it on the broadcast. I was assistant secretary at HUD and gave out the CDBG funding, Community Development Block Grant funding. Ted Kennedy calls me up and says, I want to give out the funding with you in Massachusetts. I said, Senator, it's like 20 small cities all through western Massachusetts before you even get to Boston. He said, yes, I know. I want to come and do it with you. In a car, city to city, every city, pictures, handshakes, big foam check, you know, cardboard check. That kind of personal touch, even for Senator Ted Kennedy. He taught me a lot on a lot of levels.
That's some memory. Listen, Governor, I really appreciate your being with us today. I wish I could have another hour with you, but this is the way it is, and I thank you so much. And you know, I'm thinking about you. So good luck, and we'll be talking to you soon, I hope.
Thank you, doctor. Thank you very much. Bye.